It's a pleasure to be here. First, I want to thank for the invitation. It's great. So today I'll be talking about bootstrapping planar integral for super young males using integrability. This is based on a work which came out this summer with Simone, Frank, and Ankoy. So the question which motivates this work, the question that I want to try to answer during this talk, is that how much can we learn about planar integral for super young males if we... Oh, yeah. If you combine integrability and bootstrap. A similar question was posed in a work which was our inspiration, which asked the same question in 1D defect CFD in N=4. They used integrability and numerical bootstrap, and they were able to they were able to get this curve for the OP coefficient of two protected and one non-protected operator as a function of coupling. So the curve that the full curve in blue that they got is the result of numerical bootstrap, and at weak coupling we see that it matched perfectly with the weak coupling calculation. They also compare with the strong coupling, and again there is a perfect match, and there is this nice interpolation in between. So our final goal is to get a curve like this for the OP coefficient of Konishi as a function of coupling in the planar integral for super young males. That's the end goal. So the method we are gonna take to answer this question is gonna be described in the four following steps. So first, we are going to consider the OP expansion of a stress sensor four-point correlator in the planar limit. And then we're going to build functional that acts on this OP expansion, but it's only sensitive to the single trace. So we want to kill the contribution of double trace. Oh, sorry. And this is because we know how single trace enters in the OPE. They enter with a positive coefficient, and they're also computable using integrability. So we know much more about single traces. However, double traces are nuisance for our calculation, so we want to get rid of them. We will see this more explicitly later. And then once we have such a functional that acts on the OPE and just singles out single traces, we want to get the spectrum of these single trace operators using integrability method. And then we want to combine all this information to numerically bootstrap planar integral 4 to get bounds on the OP coefficients. To take this step again. Yes. I'm going to go through this outline to answer this to take these four steps that I mentioned. So first we're going to build the setup of our stress sensor correlator. Then we're going to build the functional. We're going to see the menu of functional that actually does the job for us, that kills the single traces, kills the double traces, and spits out the single traces. Then we are going to set up our bootstrap problem. We're going to review the data we get from integrability, and then we're going to combine all those to get our numerical result. So let's discuss the setup. So the setup, as I mentioned, is N=4 super young males in the planar limit. So we're in the limit that n is strictly infinity, and we are at small g young males with the product kept fixed, so we are in the finite tooth coupling limit and strictly n. In this limit, we consider the simplest half BPS operator, which is the stress sensor multiplet, shown as OXY here. Here, X is the space-time dependence, and Y is a null vector ensuring that the O is lives in the traceless symmetric representation of SO6. So in our analysis, from now on, we will use two values for G. instead of getting the full curve that I mentioned, we would in this talk we would just set the steps by looking at two G's. One which is weak coupling, we can compare with the loop data. Another which is a strong, it's kind of strongish, the loop expansion breaks, and our result is a first prediction in that regime. So with that setup illustrated, we can look at the correlator. The correlator of a study again is a 4 point of this half PPS operator O, which is the stress tensor multiplet. We use super conformal word identities to separate the dynamical part from the free theory. Here, Z and Z bar are cross ratio, are space time cross ratio, and alpha bar are R charge cross ratio. So they're cross ratio in the Y variable, and Z are cross ratios in Z variable. And the only dependence of the correlator is through Z and alpha. Right. A few things I have to mention about this correlator. First is that the prefactor that is in front of H is to ensure to impose super conformal var identities. So we want the correlator to be protected when Z is equal alpha. So we want it to not depend on G. We want it to be equal to free theory. So this is where the coefficients are coming from, ensuring that O is equal to free theory when Z is equal alpha. And also in the planar limit, it's important to say that H would be independent of N, and it would effectively become like a correlator of four scalar primaries with delta equal four, with properties that are expected from correlator, which I'm gonna show subsequently. To argue that H is actually an effective correlator, we can see that it satisfies crossing. It can also be OP expanded as a sum of protected and unprotected operators. In the unprotected operator, we can have a single trace and double traces. Also, in the regular limit, we can see that this reduced correlator has a nice behavior that it decays a large Z and Z bar. This behavior is usually better than the behavior we get from conformal correlators. So it decays much faster. This is going to be useful when we write the dispersion relation. So now that I went over the setup and what correlator we want to study, the next step would be to get rid of the double traces, be able to set up the bootstrap. Yeah. There's no question, I'm gonna just move to that. Yes. So we want to get rid of the double traces because we do not have any positivity for them. The way they enter into the reduced correlator H is in a way that we cannot ensure their positivity. The reason is that they're first contribution shows up in the free theory, and their 1 over n correction enters in the reduced correlator. So there is no positivity constraint on the 1 over n correction to the OPE. We also don't know them from integrability. So with these two things, the only way that we can actually set up a bootstrap problem is to just remove them and get rid of them. And we do that by using double discontinuity. So double discontinuity for us is a functional that acts on the block, and it spits out the block times a sine squared factor, which is proportional to 1 over n squared for the double traces. And since it's proportional to 1 over n squared, it vanishes. It strictly vanishes for our setup in H. So we see that the double discontinuity, because of this sine squared, provides us with that vanishing of the double trace we're looking for. However, double discontinuity is usually picks a channel. So it's calculated either in the S channel or in the T channel or U channel. It's not crossing symmetric. So we cannot impose a crossing symmetry that we usually do on the double discontinuity itself. We want to reconstruct the correlation function, the full crossing symmetric correlation function from this double discontinuity. And we can do this using dispersion relation. Dispersion relation having a crossing symmetric kernel can provide us with, can make this double discontinuity, can make this, can make the, can reproduce the crossing symmetric correlator. Right. So double discontinuity, yes, I can actually define what it is. I can write it down. So it's like the imaginary part of the amplitude, if you want an intuitive answer. Strictly, it's Euclidean there's a factor. So it's the Euclidean answer minus the analytic continuation below the cut and above the cut, where Z and Z bar, so double discontinuity axon. Something, so let me. So this is double disc acting on the correlator. That's what it gives us. Sorry. Okay. And depends on whether we are in the S channel, we're in the S channel regime, the Z and Z bar are smaller than zero, or whether we are in the T channel regime, the Z and Z bar are bigger than one. It's discontinuity along a different cut. So it's, so yeah. It's kind of a, like it's kind of like an imaginary part. If it was if it was just G above the cut minus G below the cut, that was exactly the imaginary part. But you, instead of that, you have something something slightly different. Okay. Right. However, if you sit and calculate this for conformal blocks, you see that this would just give you this additional 2 sine squared. It gets rid of the double traces. So another nice thing is that OP expansion commutes with this double discontinuity. So we can do the OP expansion inside the dispersion relation. And this would give us this double discontinuity of the protected part plus the sine squared that I mentioned times the block. One further nice thing that we are going to use is that the double discontinuity of the protected part of the correlator is actually the same as double discontinuity of a correlator in the strong coupling regime. Because in the strong coupling regime, all the single traces, all the single traces decouple. And you only have double traces and the protected part, but the double traces are killed by the double discontinuity. So double discontinuity of protected is actually the same as double of HS strong, which is a nice and known function. Okay. So far we were able to write the double discontinuity as the double discontinuity of HS strong plus a sum over the long single trace operators. We were able to remove the double traces. Next, we're just going to give a name to the double to the dispersion relation of a single block. We're going to call it the Polyakov-Ergy block. And then we can express the dispersion relation for H as H is strong, which comes from the dispersion relation of double disk of H is strong, plus plus a sum over this Polyakov-Regi block, where in the sum only single traces enter. So this is an expression that we will use widely after. It's a we rewrote the correlator such that we removed all the double trace contribution, and we have only the strong correlator, which we know explicitly what it is, and we have the sum over single traces that we can calculate using integrability.
How do these look like for leading twist, for the leading twist projection? They simplify when z goes to zero.
When z goes to zero, in general?
Just leading.
So the leading twist would be twist two. We don't have like a closed form for them. We just write them either in, as an integral in, as the integral I just wrote, and we do the integral numerically, or we use Mellin space, Mellin transform of this. So now we are ready to introduce the five set of functionals that we use to solve to solve the bootstrap problem. The first set of functional is XUV, which is a functional which uses the form that I'm going to define them later. It would impose crossing symmetry in the cross ratio space. We're going to have BT, which would check the consistency between dispersion relation with different subtraction scheme. We're going to have BV, which is going to do the same thing, but in position space. And then we're going to build projective functional, which gives the OPE coefficient at one loop in terms of the anomalous dimension, which would basically solve our problem, the question that we're looking at, but at one loop. Then we're going to have phi LL plus 2, which gives the anomalous dimension of one operator in terms of anomalous dimension of another single trace operator, again, as one loop. So U and V crossing is ensured by choosing a crossing symmetry kernel. You can explicitly see that the Polyakov-Regi block is UV symmetric, so there is nothing to impose in the SNT channel crossing, but the crossing between SNU channel or TNU channel is a non-trivial constraint that we can impose. And imposing that gives us infinitely many non-trivial constraints that we can use in our numerical studies. So we have infinitely many sum rules out of XUV for different U and V. For each U and V, we have a different set of, we have a different sum rule. So now to introduce the rest of the functional, I have to,
Question related to what I was asking before. For twist two, you don't have double traces flowing, right?
No.
It's only single traces. So is P equal to the block in that case?
Yes.
P is equal to the block for twist two, and for twist four, P and the block are different.
Right. So P acting on, yes, P acting on the cross channel block. Yes, it's equal to the. Yes.
P is just, it turns out to be equal to the conformal block up to the point where you start getting double traces, and then it's a bit different.
Right. For twist exactly two, you're right, but we're not at twist exactly two. That's the point. That's. So we will be. Yes. We will be at twist. We're going to have this G correction to the twist.
But still,
You don't have any double traces.
Right. So still, would that mean that it's not double trace, then the usual blocks are good, right? I don't need it improved.
Right. I guess the only thing that this does for you, this integration, is that makes it crossing metric, yeah, makes it U and V symmetric in U and V. Did you already? Yeah.
That was already true.
That was already true for them. So yeah, I guess for twist exactly two, sorry, twist when there's no double trace, this would just spits out the block itself. Like the action of this would be just the block itself. Yeah, that, right.
In this case, there is a leading ratchet trajectory where it does nothing, and then everyone else, it does something.
Right. So to introduce the rest of the functional, we need to introduce the Malling representation for the identical operators, which is given as follows. Here, ST plus U has to be 4 times delta. First, delta was 16, so this has to be, delta was 4, so this has to be 16. And then the Malling amplitude actually takes a simple form when you approach a pole. So close to a pole, close to the S-channel pole, the Malling amplitude is just in the form that I've given. Here, Q, importantly, has the 2 sine squared inside it. Yes, so Q importantly has the 2 sine squared inside it. So it already, whatever written in terms of Malling amplitude, already kills the double traces. And now we can move toward defining the dispersive functional by writing a dispersion relation for M. So the nice behavior of HUV, the nice decay of HUV in the rigid limit, also implies the nice behavior of MSD at large S. So here again, we can write dispersion relation without any subtraction or even with multiplication by something. So both of these dispersion relation would hold because MSD decays with S squared in the large S. And the book, yes. And none of them enhances the zeros that we had before. So this is opposed to actually subtracting. Subtracting would enhance zeros. Then assuming the same spectrum in S and T channel, we can deform the contour in the dispersion relation to pick up the poles that I mentioned in the S channel, in the S channel pole and the T channel pole. And then we would have the following form for the Polyakov-Regi block, which is just the sum of the poles in the S channel and T channel, and the sum of the poles over descendant. This is just comes from the deforming the contour of dispersion relation. And again, we only have single traces showing up in the sum. Now we can get. Now we are ready to define our B functionals. B functional are just the just a subtraction, just the difference between different subtracted dispersion relation, because both of them has to be are equal to each other. So one minus the other has to be zero, and imposing that would give us the B functional. And BV functional is just the Malling transform of that. This constraint is non-trivially satisfied. So you can. You have to put everything in the expansion and put the B protected part to ensure that this condition satisfies. Now that we defined our functional coming from dispersion relation, we can be a little bit fancier than that and define functionals that actually solve the one loop problem analytically. So at weak coupling, the dispersive functional, in addition to killing double traces, they suppress the contribution of single traces, which come with twist more and bigger. So it suppresses their contribution to two loop because of the sine squared now would be proportional to g squared. The only single trace operator that survive at one loop would be the twist two operator. And we want to build functional that singles out the contribution of a single spin on those twist two operator. So if you can find functional that acts on the sum and gives me only one of the terms in the sum, I am kind of done because I can single out that term and write it in terms of things that I know. So to do this, I need to find the kernel to integrate against B. Yeah.
Can you remind that? I think it looks to me like you are saying that twist 2 contributes because 2 over 2 is 1, which is odd. Right? And you have this sign of twist over 2. So twist 4 over 2 is even, so it doesn't contribute. Is that the
case? No, so the reason, so the sign squared starts, so sign squared starts at twist 4 and higher. So.
There is no
sine squared. The same reason that there is no double trace. Right. So if you find a kernel that it spits us a functional that singles out that singles out a specific spin, then we are done. And indeed, we were able to find such functional, such a kernel, and the projective functional that we were able to build were the two following one. Here, the first one, psi relates the anomalous dimension, which is of order g, to the anomalous OP coefficient here. And in the second one, what phi does relates the anomalous dimension of spin L to anomalous dimension of spin L plus 2. And you see because of this delta Lj, psi L acting on all on the sum just spits out the spin L operator. Same for phi acting would just spits out two operator, L and L plus 2. So it can relate the two. And I should mention that beta and these phi L infinities, they are things that I know from the integral. So if you combine these two together, if you give me the anomalous dimension of, say, Konishi, for instance, of one single trace operator, I can spit out any anomalous dimension and anomalous OP coefficient of any other operator analytically using just these two functionals. So these two functionals solve the problem that I want analytically and one loop. But we want to do more than that. We don't want to just stick to the V coupling, we want to have something which works non-perturbatively. Psi functional actually seems to be helpful in that direction too, because psi functional, if you check after you build them, you see that these are actually positive everywhere. So they are asymptotically, except the compact region in tau j plane, they are positive everywhere else. So this is going to be very helpful in stabilizing the numerics. So not only they solve the problem analytically, but they can, but they're also very useful in the numerical analysis for G's that are non-perturbative. So here I show the action of psi zero on J zero, which if you compare, it's quite different with action of psi zero on any other spin. It has a different slope on twist. So now that we reviewed the functional, we are ready to set up our bootstrap problem using the functionals that I mentioned. So the input to the bootstrap problem will be the functionals. So as mentioned previously, each functional we have give us a valid sum rule each of the five functional that we reviewed gives us a valid sum rule. So a final linear combination of them would be also a valid sum rule. So that's what we consider in the numerical setup of our problem. We consider k of these sum rules, each of them with coefficient alpha k, and we know that it's going to be zero for any alpha k because each of them is zero. So here alpha is our optimizing variable. We can then separate the protected part. Which we already know what that is. We have the full function. And the OPE that we want to optimize, the OPE we want to obtain, we want to put bounds on one side and separate the rest on the other side and impose positivity on the rest. So we would say find alphas such that the rest of the things that I separated are positive. As a side, I should mention that integrability will enter in this step. It would tell me in the delta prime and j prime plane what operators I need to impose positivity on. So now that we impose positivity on everything else, we know by the equality that we wrote that those rest of the things should be negative, and that's what's written here. So protected plus Konishi needs to be negative, which is just the result of imposing positivity on everything else. And now this inequality is what's going to give us the optimization problem that we want. So if we maximize the protected part, which is like a number that we know what it is, times alpha k. So if you maximize alpha k, so it's acted on the protected part such that when it acts on the operator that we want to fix its OPE, let's for now consider it to be Konishi. To be one, we find an upper bound. So it's basically just optimizing this so that like minimizing this to get an upper bound or maximizing to get a lower bound. Right. So with the bootstrap problem being set up, we can now review the data from integrability and then we can look at the results. We can ask what the combination of these bootstrap method and the integrability data give us. So for the perturbative coupling for g equals 0.1, we use the loop expansion for the leading trajectory single trace data. So the data which is specified on this line comes from the loop expansion. We use integrability at large spin and for a spin zero gap. So above the gap, we impose positivity everywhere. We have no resolution. We don't know what operators are in the continuum. So we impose it to be positive on a grid everywhere. Below the gap, we know that there is only one trajectory, which is the trajectory that I draw, and we know where the operators are, so we impose positivity directly on that. Same would be true for 0.3. However, getting the data for 0.3 is harder. We will use QSC to get the data for the first five operator on the leading trajectory and to get the spin zero gap. We assume the very conservative gap for all other operators. And again, we impose positivity everywhere above the gap. And below the gap, we only impose positivity on the leading, on the specified point. So giving this data now to the numerical optimizer, we can see what we get as the upper bound for the OPE coefficient we are interested in. So first, we're going to look at a toy model in the V coupling limit. So the toy model we will look at would just include the operators, would include the functionals that solved our problem analytically in the one loop. So we do expect them to give us good result by themselves because they were able to solve the problem at one loop. And 0.1 is still small enough. And indeed, we see that just including these two, we recover a really good upper bound. I should mention the exact value of lambda Konishi at 5 loop is 0.30067. So this upper bound is already doing a good job. And we see that it's saturated, like the optimized functional that we get is already saturated by psi. So it's not doing much. It's just a psi functional. It's using phi just a little bit. Now that we learn how to play the game, we can keep adding more functionals. So making the vector alpha bigger. So we had this vector alpha k. Now we go to k equal 20. Including 20 functionals with the ones that I mentioned. So you can have four phis, you can have psi zero, you can have bt and x. You see that the optimized functional that you obtain is much smaller than anything else on the plot. So you see that the optimizer now is doing a non-trivial job of finding the optimized functional. It's not just it's not just saturated by psi zero. It's putting zeros, finding the spectrum. Yeah, and it's characteristically different from any individual functional. This is achieved by non-trivial cancellation between different functionals. We do more. I haven't put the plot in the talk. We add 40 functionals. Adding 40 functional again improves the bound. So the final bound that we get for this value of the coupling 0.1 is 0.301, which is very close to the value we get from the loop expansion. And we see that the bound gets better as we add more functional. So what we hope is that in the limit that we added enough functional, we would be able to saturate. We would be able to find the bound which saturates, which is saturated by the Konishi result, which is saturated by the loop. So we can now go to strong coupling. Strong coupling is a bit less under control. Now psi and phi, they're not close to the actual solution. Because the value of the anomalous dimension is just far from the perturbative value. We directly look at the result with 20 functionals, and we see that, again, the optimizer is doing a non-trivial job. It's putting zeros finding some operator by putting zero, and and we see that there are some non-trivial cancellation between functionals, which goes from 10 to the 5 to 10 to the minus 15. The bound we get for this value of coupling is 0.299 for 40 functionals. And as a point of comparison, to tell you how bad psi functional would have done by itself, psi functional alone would just give 0.35, which is quite off from what we get. This again shows that psi is not good away from the perturbative limit. We don't have any result in this regime, so this is a new bound. But we can do comparison with results extrapolated from a large analytic G. And there was a recent work again this summer in which Aldai, Hansen, and Silva used dispersion relation and integrability to obtain anomalous dimension of Konishi analytically at large G. What we did is we took their result and we extrapolated it to small g with different extrapolation. And with that, we can get a range which we expect to be compatible with this large G result. And we see that our Konishi result, which was 0.29, lies within this regime and makes it much smaller. Right. So I want to mention some properties that we see from our numerical analysis. These properties are there both in the perturbative and the non-perturbative analysis. First point is that the bound has dependence on the leading trajectory single trace data. So the data that we took from integrability is indeed very important for the analysis. If we don't include the actual operator, we can rule out the theory. We can find the bound which rules out the theory. So for example, if you look at the plot for the spin 2 operator, before we include the operator, which is like this gray line, we see that we get a bound which rules out the theory. We get an upper bound which is smaller than the actual value. But as soon as we include the spin 2 operator into our numerical analysis, then we get a bound which is saturated and stabilizes and doesn't change. So like it doesn't matter how far you go to the right. It just matters that it includes the spin 2 operator. So in that way, we were able to give a window and also find the spectrum indirectly from the bootstrap. However, the bound seems to be insensitive to the exact position of the operators on the subleading trajectory. That's just an observation. This might get resolved if we have more functional or if we get better at this game. To stabilize the bound, one has to use high spin and high twist data. And both extrapolation are necessary for an analysis. So the functional that we get is quite stable. This is, again, just an observation. It's stable against adding crossing symmetry functionals, but it's not very stable against adding B functionals, the one that were a difference between dispersion relation. Adding more Bs, you can you have to impose a much tighter grid. So we see instability in that. And then asymptotically in spin for low twist, we see that our optimized functional goes as a power law. So we know that it's going to be positive. It's going to be asymptotically positive. We can check that. Okay, so with that, I reach the summary and outlook of the talk. So what we did in this work, we found upper bound for the OPE coefficient of the Konishi operator using numerical bootstrap and integrability for a V coupling and a strong-ish coupling. We did not find a non-trivial lower bound with our functional. However, in order to get the curve that I showed you in the beginning, we would need such a lower bound. We do not know if that's possible at all with this bootstrap problem or what improvement is needed to get a lower bound and actually sandwich the result between an upper bound and a lower bound. One direction that we want to take is to go beyond the linear optimization. So far, our work was just linear optimization. We saw that in CFD bootstrap, once they made the transition from linear optimization to semi-definite programming, they saw a huge difference. So one would imagine the same thing happening here. For that, we need to find approximation for delta dependence of the dispersing functional. We do not have that yet, so we need something like this homological recursion relation that people use there. It would be interesting to combine our method with other bootstrapping that people do for an equal four. For example, we could combine our method with constraint from supersymmetric localization to improve the bound. It would be also eventually great to get a curve for anomalous dimension of Konishi as a function of coupling, starting from the large coupling this time instead of starting from low coupling and then hopefully meeting in the middle. Yeah, and that's it. Thank you.